This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local music and more. On the program today, we have conductor David Commande, who leads the Heartland Festival Orchestra. They're giving a concert on Saturday evening in Peoria, a nicely varied program that they call Music Alive. He'll explain why as we get into that conversation. And then towards the end, we will talk with Benny McCarthy, who is the accordionist and one of the founding members of the Irish traditional group called Danu. They're going to be performing tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts to kick off your St. Patrick's Day festivities a day early. And we'll hear some of their music as well, including this tune from their disc called The Rose, The Road Less Traveled. It's actually three different tunes, three different reels. Danu here on Live and Local. We'll talk with Benny McCarthy later in the show and hear more from this CD. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. My guest for this portion of Live and Local on FM 90.9 is David Commande, who is the music director of the Heartland Festival Orchestra, which is in its inaugural season in Peoria. And David also conducts the New Jersey Youth Symphony, and I understand you just got back from there.
Yes, I've been out there working well and happily with the young musicians, and it's a delight to be back here with friends and family and colleagues, and to visit with you again.
Well, I appreciate that. That's nice of you to say. What does the what's this commute like for you? How often do you work with the New Jersey kids?
Well, the commute is, weeks at a time, depending. Sometimes I'm back in between. There is an ongoing weekly schedule, of course. Although I don't take a rehearsal every week. There's a staff of conductors. There are a total of 9 ensembles that are part of New Jersey Youth Symphony, 3 full orchestras, 3 string ensembles, amazingly a couple of flute ensembles. A very strong program there, and a percussion ensemble. So a lot of my job actually is collaborating with and supervising a fine staff of conductors.
What is the what area does that orchestra cover?
The central part of New Jersey, pretty much west of Manhattan. If you go west across the river and you draw a circle with maybe a 1-hour radius, then you're looking at the central part of New Jersey.
You used to conduct the Boston Youth Symphony?
Yes, its name has been transformed. It was the Greater Boston Youth Symphony for the first 30 or 40 years of its life, known affectionately as GYBSO. And then since my time there, it became the Boston Youth Symphony Orchestra, and I have no idea how it's set these days.
Well, how does your New Jersey group compare to the Boston kids?
Well, it's a little different because of it's interesting. New Jersey is similar to New England, but not quite the same. There's a strong Manhattan influence in New Jersey, and the differences among the states, of course, are subtle. But there's a little difference, and the Greater Boston Youth Symphony Orchestra drew from as many as 5 states of New England, partly because it was a Sunday program and there would be families bringing their young players from 2, sometimes even as far as 3 hours away because it was on Sundays. We had a couple of students that came down to Boston from Maine every Sunday. So wow. That was an interesting thing. That orchestra, that program is over 50 years old, and in New Jersey, it's past its 30th anniversary.
That's a nice history for both of them. That's actually incredible to think that the kids come from that far away, and I guess that indicates, at least in Boston, that indicates a level of seriousness on those players that it seems a little hard to come by around here. I know with the youth orchestra here in Champaign-Urbana, you know, you're lucky if you can get kids to come from 10 minutes away sometimes,
yeah. Well,
even for a Sunday.
The youth orchestra experience is a fantastic one. I've been so impressed in my experience with young musicians by the musicians and also by the positive effects of the youth orchestra experience on them. Young musicians in youth orchestras are generally teenagers going through otherwise challenging times in their lives when fantastic growth is occurring, which is challenging in and of itself. The youth orchestra serves as a kind of a focus for their lives. They develop a network of friends with whom they share important things in common, which is not quite the same as just, you know, classmates in school. And they share values, and I think it anchors their lives. And the experience of playing in a youth orchestra is great artistically, it's great for their playing, and there are wondrous civics lessons to be learned playing in an orchestra. This mutual dedication to an artistic accomplishment, an aesthetic goal, rather than simply being on a team in order to beat another team at a sport, I think is a fantastic element. And every player in a youth orchestra learns the element of collaboration with people who are the same and people who are different, and dedication to the whole. So it's a wondrous thing, a youth orchestra, and I find it fascinating and rewarding to be involved with one.
So you've been involved with youth orchestra for how many years now?
Well, I took on the role at Gipso in 89-90. So we're talking about a couple decades here.
Yeah. How do you think your experience with that type of player, I mean, admittedly very advanced players, I remember when I heard and saw you conduct a concert in Boston on the Esplanade of the Mahler First Symphony, which was, you know, a pretty good undertaking for high school kids. How does your experience with them, do you think, transfer to working with professionals, with the Peoria Symphony until recently, and now the Heartland Festival Orchestra?
That's a fascinating question. The fact is that every conductor's obligation is to assist the players to exceed themselves. Now, we don't really talk about that a lot with professionals, simply because their professional pride is going to take them a long ways. But a conductor of professional musicians should still feel an obligation that he or she only makes it easier, only helps them be better. And that's not paternalistic, it's just that's the role of the conductor. And when you have less technically advanced players, it's natural to be very conscious of that. But it's also a lot like an instrumentalist, for example, who's not the so-called born talent, who finds everything physically easy and never really has any trouble advancing. If in fact it's a challenge to develop that technique, then along the way, with good teaching, you become conscious of what's needed to play well, and you as the player eventually have the ability to teach better. In the case of working with less advanced players, you become aware of some of the ensemble challenges and some of the instrumental challenges along the way in a fashion that you wouldn't if you're only working with the most advanced musicians in an orchestra. And that, I think that helps the conductor to conduct in a way that's better for everybody. I mean, here's a good example. Giving an upbeat to a horn player is different to giving an upbeat to a percussionist or a string player, for that matter. And as incredibly talented as the young horn players have been during these two decades that I've worked with young players, nonetheless, they've been differentiated in there and how far along they were. So I had to be really conscious, all right, what can I and should I do in what I give them physically that will get the best results from them? And magically or not, maybe you should say, we could say it's obvious, but that actually carries over to professional players. It's not like pressing a key on a piano. A horn player physically has to prepare that sound differently from any other instrumentalist. And so I think those experiences do transfer to my work with professionals.
So since you gave that example, what is different about the upbeat or the preparatory physical gesture you give to a horn player than a string player?
A horn player has a moment of very strong focus. It's the beginning of the sound, and everybody's conscious of the so-called clam if a horn entrance isn't perfectly clean. And nobody is more conscious of that than the players themselves. And it's very easy for the player to become focused on that instant in time that their sound is going to begin. It can be a focus of fear or anxiety. And I've found that emphasizing the musical line which is following that moment of attack, of beginning, and emphasizing that to the player and saying, I don't want this to see or feel you focusing about the beginning of the sound. I want to put your mind on the whole phrase. It's a psychological trick, but I've found that it has helped many a horn player bring in a perfect entrance. And the other, I suppose, the colloquial joke or understanding among conductors may go more or less, give a horn player an entrance, but don't look them in the eye at that moment. So I've found that I have to devote a lot of mental focus to inviting, you know, really critical horn entrances. And this really applies, of course, to solo moments and exposed moments and extra difficult moments. I'll give it a great deal of mental focus and attention and be conscious of the way physically I give the upbeat, but I don't want to visually create some kind of a focus or attention on the beginning of the sound.
Right, so your upbeat might be a little more broad or expansive maybe, in part because they have to breathe.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm literally making sure that I breathe in a way that's... See, a horn player has so much resistance to the air once it gets going from the instrument. It's different from, obviously, vastly different from a flute. There's so much back pressure, and the support has to be so strong in the body of the horn player, and then the muscular focus of the lips to get exactly the right pitch. And on top of all of that, just I couldn't do it myself, obviously, not being a horn player, but the mental focus to get the lips to vibrate in exactly the right speed for the pitch that's desired, that's a huge mental challenge and a physical challenge. It's part of their craft. So all that just has an effect on the way I'll invite a horn player to play. And that's a combination of thinking about it, and then obviously experience through the years of in many, 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 many rehearsals and performances.
I do want to, of course, talk about your concert this coming weekend. I was just wanted to give listeners a little bit of the background and about you, if they didn't know, and also some of the craft of conducting that people seem to be rather interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct that the Heartland Fest Orchestra is starting the concert on Saturday in Peoria with the Birds of Respighi?
That's correct.
Well, let's listen to the opening part of that, which of course includes horns and strings and woodwind instruments as well, and lots of colorful sounds. This is music by Ottorino Respighi, and you'll figure out pretty quickly why it's called The Birds. And we're talking with David Commanda here on Live and Local. ¶¶ That was the opening movement of a suite of pieces called The Birds by Respighi, performance by the Lausanne Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Jesus Lopez Cobos here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. My guest is David Commande, music director of the Heartland Festival Orchestra, who will be playing that piece and several others on their concert in Peoria this Saturday night at 7:30 at Five Points, Washington. And that's actually a favorite piece of mine of Respighi's, but it's one of a number of them where he adapted older, much older pieces of music, right?
And that was a habit of his. It was a strong interest of his, and it came, I believe, to some extent because of his training as a young musician composer by a professor. It seems to me he's from Bologna, and one of his professors was focused on music of the 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th centuries. And I think Respighi was a fairly conservative man in his interest. People listening to it, of course, will, although it's 20th century music, will not hear all the dissonance that featured in so much 20th century music, but it was this love for the earlier music that comes through, and it's fascinating the ways in which he resets music that might have been written for the harpsichord, for example, that first movement, Bernardo Pasquini, who's a 17th century into the 18th century composer. He wrote it for harpsichord, but Respighi takes these themes and he sets them with wonderful imagination for these instruments. I consider him a brilliant orchestrator, and I love the sound. You know, the best known of Respighi's pieces, of course, are the big tone poems for full orchestra, the so-called Roman pieces, the Pines of Rome and the Festivals and Fountains of Rome, for a broad palette. But these are like watercolors, and they're gorgeous.
Do I remember right that the original pieces, the composer didn't necessarily have birds in mind, but this was Respighi's imagining of their reimagining of the pieces, or did some of them?
Well, in some of my research, it has been implied, you know, that the pieces did have these themes, but I can't attest to that for sure. It is fascinating because I find them very powerfully evocative of the different kinds of birds. And I suspect this was the one called The Hen was a harpsichord piece by Rameau, and I would not be surprised actually if Rameau had that in mind. But what's extraordinary is I think that it gets to it really does sound like the pecking of a hen and the fussing and the rushing around and the clucking. And you know, the one which is about the cuckoo, it's very obvious to everyone because that's one bird whose call is unmistakable. Even though we in America, unfortunately, don't hear many of them, we just don't hear them out in nature. But anybody who's been in Europe and heard a real live cuckoo sound, it's a gorgeous thing which creates an instant atmosphere. But one of the things I love about this is that you have that cuckoo theme or that sound, that call, which is not oppressive. I mean, you get it in the movement, but that could be extraordinarily boring if it predominated too greatly.
I think when I was in Pennsylvania, there were two kinds of birds I used to try to find because I was a bit of a bird watcher when I was a kid, and one was the Baltimore Oriole. And I never saw one. And the other was the cuckoo, because they were supposed to have been at least occasionally around there. And I don't think I ever heard one of those either.
Mm-hmm.
One of my great childhood disappointments, not major disappointments. But so I've always been curious to hear them. But you're right, we know that sound in there. You're giving to this concert clearly something of an animal theme. And you have this symphony of Joseph Haydn, his 82nd, which has an animal nickname, which he probably didn't give it, or did he?
I don't think he did not give it that theme. He wrote this symphony along with five others on commission from from a Parisian concert presentation, a Masonic lodge, actually, which had a series of concerts in Paris in the 1780s. And so he wrote this. This is one of the so-called Paris symphonies. And he wrote it, but in the finale of the piece, there is an open fifth drone, much like we would hear from a bagpipe, while the theme goes merrily above it. So, jum, jum, bum, bidle-dee-lum. So that drone keeps pulsing underneath, and it reminded people of how people traveling with a dancing bear in those times would use such a drone from a bagpipe underneath and then be playing a tune above while the bear danced. So the nickname has to do with that real-life experience that people long ago had of dancing bears.
So if somebody's just imagining a bear lumbering in the woods or lounging in a zoo, that's not the right image
in this case. No, there's a bear. You know, Stravinsky in Petrushka, he brings a musical portrait of a bear lumbering along, a dancing bear, and he uses that wonderful high tuba. Bum bum bum, bee dee 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 dum. But this is not the same attempt to portray the actual animal that is the case in other works of musical art.
Well, here it is. Somebody's fanciful imagining that within Haydn's music, which Haydn didn't necessarily have in mind, the last movement of Haydn's 82nd symphony, nicknamed the Bear, here on Live and Local during our conversation with David Commande as they prepare to play this piece and others on Saturday evening in Peoria. That was the last movement of Haydn's nicknamed Symphony the Bear, number 82. You can hear the whole piece on Saturday's concert in Peoria at Five Points, Washington, by the Heartland Festival Orchestra. David Commande will conduct and is my guest here on Live and Local. And he will also take the unusual role, fairly unusual role for a conductor, of being also a soloist on his own concert in another animal piece. David, I guess I had heard you were a cellist, but I'd forgotten that.
Well, I guess this is a reminder. You and I as conductors have started out as instrumentalists, and I know you agree with me. We need to remember our roots, and when we are at our task of assisting our players in doing their best, because sometimes what they're doing physically is so tough compared to our physical role. And anyway, I still love to play. It's to me, playing directly is a kind of musical singing which I would miss tremendously if I didn't have a chance to do that. And this piece, The Swan, which is one of the movements from Camille Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals, has always been close to my heart. It's just a beautiful song, and although originally composed for a solo cello with an accompaniment from two pianos, it has been for generations really played in arrangement with a harp accompaniment. And specifically for this concert, we are adding the element of the dance to it. We have the director of the Peoria Academy of Ballet, Rebecca von Rathonyi, will be the ballerina dancing choreography that was created about 100 years ago for Anna Pavlova, brilliant Russian ballerina who came to the United States and had an immense triumph as a dancer. And Michel Fokine choreographed a short dance or ballet called The Dying Swan to this music. So in our program, I will be joined by the harpist in accompanying this this dance by Rebecca von Rothenje. And in fact, we're very close to the actual centenary of Pavlova's arrival in the United States and premiere of this dance in this country.
And was that coincidental, or did you know that when programming the piece?
Oh, everything that I do is is planned in advance. There are always serendipities that I have found, and you know, wonderful things that come together, pieces that sometimes come together, they get programmed in my mind instinctively, and then the further I get involved with researching and preparing them, the stronger the connections among them, and this is an example of that.
And this is Rebecca's second appearance with you this season. She was your dancer, wasn't she, for The Soldier's Tale earlier in the season?
Yes, that's true.
And I like very much how you're sort of making this whole event of a piece with a pre-concert and intermission enjoyment. You've got some animals from the zoo showing up?
Right. The Peoria Zoo is actually our charity partner. And people listening may not yet be aware that each of our concerts at the Heartland Festival Orchestra has a charity partner, which quite simply benefits from the concert. We share in the proceeds from each of our concerts with a charity, and the Peoria Zoo is the one for this program, and that all comes together, of course, with the theme. And the Peoria Zoo is sending, with the appropriate handlers, of course, some smaller animals that will be there before the concert and even in the intermission for up close and personal experiences. And we love to mix it up at our concerts. And Kidder Music also will be bringing instruments along to have something of a musical petting zoo at intermission as well.
Sounds like a lot of fun, and obviously you're trying to get some kids involved in this.
That's all part of it, yes.
We just have about a minute. Briefly, what's the connection to the other piece that I haven't mentioned, which is the concert variations of Alberto Ginastera?
Well, you know, the Ginastera concert variations, in a way, is a tour through the orchestral zoo. Forgive me, colleague musicians, but the wonderful thing about this piece, besides its brilliant orchestration, is that it features each of the instruments of the orchestra in a solo moment through this series of variations on a theme. And so, essentially, it's a gorgeous walk through the orchestra in a way in succession, and each of the variations for the various instruments of the orchestra is, first of all, they're beautifully various, these variations, but they also feature and highlight fascinating qualities and personalities and abilities of each of the instruments. So it's a brief portrait of each of the instruments in succession, and I like that's why the program's called Music Alive, because we're trying not only to bring animals alive, but the instruments alive, as well as the music they're performing.
And is it safe to say you'll have a musical surprise on this concert as well?
We shall indeed have a musical surprise on this program.
And obviously we won't talk further about that.
Except to mention it, as you have.
There we go. We aim to tease. Here on this program, David Commande is my guest on Live and Local here on FM 90.9, and will conduct the Heartland Festival Orchestra this Saturday evening at 7:30, Five Points, Washington in Peoria. And if you want tickets, you can go to the Five Points, Washington website. You can just Google that. You can also buy them at Kidder Music in Peoria. And for more information on the Heartland Festival Orchestra, that's the website, heartlandfestivalorchestra.org. David, thanks once again for joining us.
It's always a pleasure to see you, Kevin. Thank you.
And best of luck on the performance.
We're looking forward to it.
And there is a bit of Saint-Saëns' The Swan from The Carnival of the Animals. The cellist is Stephen Isserlis, and the duo pianists Michael Tilson Thomas and Dudley Moore. By the way, Michael Tilson Thomas will conduct the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra at the Krannert Center in Urbana Thursday evening at 7:30. Tonight at the Krannert Center at 7:30 is the Irish traditional group Danu. Where are they playing? The Tryon Festival Theater. And I talked with one of their members yesterday. We'll air that conversation in a matter of moments. Support for WILL's Live and Local today comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. One of the most in-demand touring bands emerging from Ireland currently, Danu, started on the festival circuit in 1995 and collected a rather large prize that just a year later, and has put out 7 acclaimed CDs and a new one that they're carrying with them, and you can, I'm sure, purchase at their concert tonight. I spoke yesterday with Benny McCarthy, who is the accordion player for the group and one of the founding members. And he had just gotten to Chicago for their day off in between performances, and he was wandering the streets there, which is why you'll hear buses and other traffic noise on his cell phone. This is part of my conversation from yesterday with Benny McCarthy here on Live and Local. So I guess the first question I'd ask you is where your name comes from.
Well, it was given to us in 1995. We attended a very big Celtic festival in Lorient in France, and we were given the name. Danu, it means it's a Celtic goddess. She was actually the Celtic queen goddess. And you'll find lots of references to her, like the river Danube, which runs through Europe, is actually named after her as well. But she was like the queen of prosperity and all in Celtic mythology. A very interesting woman. She's been around a long time.
Yeah, and what other associations has she got?
Well, she had a tribe of people called Antua de Danann, which were exactly the name of another Irish band.
I was thinking that, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, there's the mountains of Anu, which are down there in Kerry. We believe there's a mountain on Mars or someplace as well, also called Danu, which somebody pointed out recently. So, yeah, there's not, again, you can find a lot even online about Danu, the woman, you know?
Yeah,
the goddess herself.
Yeah, and looks like you're on a tour of the Midwest United States at the moment, for the most part, is that right?
This march has taken us up here around Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan. So this leg of the tour was kind of, we did in early March, we did a leg in the East Coast, New Jersey and Connecticut and Vermont and New York. And we flew into Chicago and we're kind of doing a few dates over this side, which is great because it's been a few years really since we have... we've been over this set. I'm thinking maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Since you've been to the U.S. or since you've been to this part of the
country? No, since we've been this side of, in the Midwest, yeah.
And do you find any part of the country more or less enthusiastic about traditional Irish music?
Well, you know, there is differences in audiences and everything. In fairness, I remember coming on the plane and telling some of the lads, I said, I'm really looking forward to coming to Midwest because, there seems to be a slight bit more enthusiasm here about, you know, bands. I think just because maybe they don't have, you know, the amount of bands passing through wouldn't be as kind of, wouldn't be as many maybe as maybe over New York or someplace where people have some, where they have access almost every day to whatever type of music they want to hear. But we're getting a fantastic reaction. We've always loved playing here, and people are so friendly. It's great, you know.
And how important is it to contemporary Irish bands to find a following in the United States?
Well, for many bands, it's a great country for the kind of music where we're playing. There's like 40 million or something of an Irish diaspora here in the U.S. So that definitely makes it easier for music to come from Ireland and perform and tour here in the U.S. It's a big country, so there's lots of places to play, and it takes quite a number of years to actually kind of try and make your way to a lot of the states and a lot of the major towns and even, you know, smaller towns. There's so many places you have to play. And again, like, the music is very popular, the folk music we play, the Irish traditional music. And it is, like, it's one of the countries that every music wants to tour.
What do you think, what would you say makes your band stand out from other contemporary bands? For example, we had the group Slide was at Millikan University last week, and you indicated we talked with one of their members who used to be one of your members.
I don't. It's a very tough question for me to answer, in the sense that, you know, I think an audience member would have a better idea, because when we play in the band, I suppose one of the things that would, we play a lot of the older music. We do a lot less newly composed music than other bands. Most of our songs are traditional songs, in both Irish and English. I'd say most of the members in the band would be fluent Irish speakers. Again, we're from all different parts of Ireland, which means that, well, this would apply to most bands, but we all have individual styles and ideas and ways of playing the music. So I suppose by putting a combination of any musicians from different parts like that together, does make it sound different, you know.
You're listening to a conversation that I had with Benny McCarthy, the accordionist and one of the founding members of the Irish group Danu, which will be playing at the Krannert Center in Urbana tonight at 7:30. And the singer with the group, her name, he coached me on the pronunciation. It doesn't look anything like this unless you're Irish and you might figure it out. Morin Nicolliffe, and she is in this tune from their disc, which is called The Road Less Traveled. The song is by Richard Thompson, called Farewell, Farewell, arranged by Danu and heard on Live and Local. Richard Thompson tune called Farewell, Farewell, performed by Danu, featuring their vocalist Morin Nicolliffe here on Live and Local, and also guitarist Donald Clancy, another of the founding members who was away from the group for a while and returned. You can hear the group tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. For more information, krannertcenter.org, or I think the web address is danu.net, but I don't have it in front of me, and now I'm not positive about that, but you can actually find that link from the Krannert Center website. And let's continue my conversation here on Live and Local with accordion player from Danu, Benny McCarthy, as he was roaming around Chicago yesterday. One of the things that I asked Dara Bracken and the other Slide member last week was a bit about the unison playing, and he commented that I had said that I am amazed that Irish musicians, traditional musicians, the unisons are just so impeccable when they're really good. you know, the fiddle.
When they're actually playing together, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he commented that the melody is the main thing. And I noticed that in some of the recordings I was listening to of yours, they're unisons, but then there seems to be more deliberate divergence at times, you know, where there's embellishments.
Yeah, well, counter-melodies.
Yeah.
Harmonies. Again, that's part of our arrangement, I suppose. You know, going back to what you said, it probably is maybe part of our ideas. It's our way of arranging the music, and I suppose maybe that's the difference between us and other bands, you know? Everyone has their kind of style of arranging it.
Well, is there a certain amount of leeway for improvisation around the melodies or embellishment around the melodies?
Yeah, of course there is, yeah. And when we would play it in a session, there would be a lot more maybe improvisation happening. You know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I suppose when you come to arranging it for a stage performance, you have to figure out all the stuff that works.
What are the instruments that are represented in your group or include your own, which is the button accordion. Just for the lay person, I've seen these instruments, but others may not have. What's the difference between a button accordion, the kind you play, and, say,
piano accordion?
Piano accordion, yeah.
The particular accordion I play is kind of a smaller accordion. Got two rows of buttons on it as opposed to a piano keyboard. It's more, I suppose it would be classed more of a diatonic instrument than a chromatic, even though you have chromatic scales. That's the way they class them in Europe, really. The piano accordion, I suppose the main difference is this: the piano accordion has the same note in and out, you know? When you push in and out the bellows, for me it's a different note, a different scale is happening.
Oh, really? So when you blow the air, it makes one sound. If you sort of suck the air in when you're pulling it, it's a different
sound,
pitch.
Yeah.
And of course,
there's scales, and we figure out scales as well between the two port rows, you know.
And of course, your buttons don't correspond to a piano, which
absolutely. You know, a piano player could play a piano accordion if he got somebody just to push in and out the. The bellows, you know.
And the role of your instrument is both melodic and accompanying at different times?
Both. I use it for both. Especially in songs. It would be classed as lead instrument when I'm playing some of the instrumentals. But for songs, I actually combine bass and I play chords and on the right-hand side also. So I use it for both jobs, you know.
And two of the plucked instruments, the bouzouki and the guitar, those are generally accompanying?
Oh, accompanying, yeah. And again, both, because they actually can play the tunes extremely well as well. So again, everyone wavers from both roles in the band too, which may be interesting and part of our idea of a performance, you know.
Benny McCarthy talking with me yesterday while he and the band Danu were roaming around Chicago on their day off, and they're headed to Champaign-Urbana right now, no doubt in their car or bus or whatever they're traveling in, as they head to the Krannert Center in Urbana for performance tonight at 7:30. And here's another tune of theirs. Actually, it's a series of tunes. Nelly, Dan Sullivan Shamrock Swing Band, Dane Thomas's, and Jazzing with Mag Leary. We'll hear some of these, and I'll give you some other Irish events for tomorrow as we listen, and some other events that you can go see and hear in our area. It's live and local on FM 90.9.